Thank you, Professor Massey, for both your inspirational and encouraging words, and as well as your unique insights, both as provost, a demographer, and the combination of the two. My name is Jim Torchiner. I have headed up this part of the research, which I will present an overview of right now. In the 2001 study, as Provost mentioned earlier, we outlined some distinctive characteristics of a black community in Quebec and in Montreal. We portrayed a distinctive, vibrant, evolving, and rapidly growing black community, a multifaceted tapestry of many strands, cultures, and languages, drawn from the experiences of the descendants of early settlers in Canada, of Caribbean, and of more recently, African immigrants. Our current study demonstrates that the robust growth of the black community continued vigorously between 1996 and 2006. The black community increased by 37% in a 10-year period and now stands at 169,065 persons. 4 in 10 black people of Montreal were born in Canada. An additional 4 in 10 are Caribbean-born, 3/4 of whom were born in Haiti, and 1 in 6 are of African origins. Our 2001 study documented that despite this enormous diversity, inequality experienced by the black community was profound. The data underscored substantially higher rates of single-parent families, poverty and unemployment, and much lower rates of educational attainment and incomes. At the same time, we were astonished to find that this inequality persisted even when we compared blacks and non-blacks with similar educational and occupational characteristics, often finding that blacks with more advanced qualifications had higher levels of unemployment and lower incomes than non-blacks with lesser qualifications. We grouped these findings around 3 main themes: promoting opportunity, strengthening families, and diversity and cohesion. Today, with your permission and patience, I'd like to revisit these themes through the lens of the 2006 census. And the study consists of 3 parts: a detailed portrayal of the demographic challenges facing the black community in Montreal in the 21st century, an analysis of residential patterns of 27 Montreal neighborhoods, which comprise 85% of the black population, and a series of qualitative studies focusing on important aspects of the black community. Before I begin with a summary of the main demographic findings, there are many people I wish to thank. They number in the hundreds, actually, and include members of the black community who gave us of their time through participation in interviews, community consultations, steering committees, and outreach contacts. We are indebted to you and hope this study both resonates and empowers. I wish to thank the organizing team, the various researchers who met and worked over the past 3 years to bring this study to fruition. These include Sharon Springer, a census analyst who's unable to be here today, Professors Ives, Grenier, and Denoff from the McGill School of Social Work, Phone Amy, Anne-Marie Livingstone, Lucy Marion, and David Austin. A special thank you to the GORTS team, headed by Anna Gorin, who worked tirelessly with a dedicated and fun group of students to help make this day happen, Tolu Adeniyi, Elena Toes, Charlotte McCarthy, Sarah Martin, Andrea Clegg, Alex Beveridge, Yasmin Toma, Charlotte McCarthy, and Emma Frank, and Akua Carson. Lastly, I wish to thank Citizenship and Immigration Canada for providing the funding for this study. Let's begin.
Tolu? Oh, you got it already.
I'll start with overall demographic findings. As I said earlier, in 2006, Statistics Canada counted, counted 783,795 blacks in Canada. What do I got to press? Oh, that. Okay. Sorry. So that's the total black population in Canada. That was the population in 1996. And here you have the growth throughout the country. In Quebec in 96, the black population was 131,000. It's now 188,000. In Montreal, it was 122. It's now 169. But you see rapid growth throughout the country. Today, more than one in five of Canadian blacks live in Montreal. Over 60% of the Canadian black population live in Ontario, and another 24% reside in Quebec. Blacks form 2.5% of the national population, but in Toronto, they formed 6.9%. Where is that? And in Montreal, they were 4.7%. Now, these are the 27 neighborhoods which we studied, which contain 85% of the black population in Montreal. And what we find is in the northeastern communities, communities of St. Michel, Villeray, Montreal North, primarily French-speaking communities, almost one in five residents of St. Michel are black, as are one in six in Rivière-la-Prairie and Montreal North. More than 34,000 black persons lived in these neighborhoods in 2006, and alone in those three neighborhoods, they constituted 20% of the entire black community in Montreal. That's more in the French-speaking section of Montreal. But in 2006, close to 26,000 black persons lived in the west in more Anglophone neighborhoods of Côte-Neige, NDG in Montreal West, LaSalle, and Little Burgundy. They constituted 15% of all black persons living in the city. In 1996, one in 10 residents of these neighborhoods were black. So what we see is that there are certain neighborhoods where the proportion of black people living in that neighborhood are higher than the proportion in the city. And these neighborhoods begin to take on a character and a flavor of the African or the Caribbean or the Canadian black experience. The most significant growth in the black community in the Montreal area in the past 10 years was in Laval. From 9,300 to almost 17,000 who now live in Laval. That's a growth rate of 81%. And it's largely attributable to a burgeoning middle class. Now, this the first set of data concerns the age structure of the Montreal black community compared to the community as a whole. And what we see right away is the black community is significantly younger and has significantly fewer elderly people. So we see almost one of every two black persons in Montreal were under the age of 25. Okay, this doesn't show which bars relate to which population group. We have here four groups that compare 96 and 2006. And what we're looking at is this third bar, which is 2006 for the black community. So the 26 and the 16 under 25 come to close to half of the community. One in four members of the black community were children under the age of 14. That's 26% here. While all children in Montreal constituted only 16.8%. Non-blacks were twice as likely to be over the age of 65, 13.3% of the non-black community compared to 6.4% of the black community. So there are some significant age differences overall between the black population and the overall population. Now let's look at gender ratios between 1996 and 2006. Women accounted for 52.9, almost 53% of the black community, while men constituted 47%. This is a higher percentage than in the non-black community. And later on, as we look at immigration data, we'll begin to see why. It does represent a change. You can see that the gender balances are beginning to correct themselves. And again, we'll see how immigration played a role in establishing that gender imbalance to begin with. When we look at linguistic abilities and knowledge of official languages, rates of bilingualism have increased dramatically, and that's English and French, and and it's moved up to 44.5% from 35%. Where am I? From 35% in 1996, but 1 in 8 black people in Montreal only speak English, and cannot communicate with more than 4 in 10 black persons who only speak French. Less than half, only those who are bilingual, that 44.5%, can speak with both unilingual Anglophones and Francophones, who comprise more than half of the community. Almost half of black men were bilingual, while substantially fewer black women speak both of Canada's official languages. Rates of bilingualism are somewhat higher among blacks than non-blacks aged 15 to 24. That is, young black people are more likely to be bilingual than young non-black people. Slightly, but still, it's an important trend. Only 1 in 6 black persons over the age of 65, however, are bilingual. Bilingualism is important both in terms of economics, but also in terms of community cohesion, because in Montreal in particular, as we know, it creates kind of distinctive neighborhoods where there are large concentrations of people who are French-speaking and other concentrations of people who are English-speaking, and a divide. It makes it more difficult to, given the bilingualism rates and the residential patterns, to form community cohesion about issues that the community feels are central and important. Let's turn to immigration. And we're looking at the impact of immigration between 1996 and 2006. First of all, 95,000 black persons in Montreal are immigrants at some point. They accounted for 56%, the majority of the entire black population. 4 in 10, 40%, of all black persons in Montreal immigrated to Canada in the past 25 years. Now, if you look at this, from 1991 to 2006, 30% of the black community arrived in Canada in that period, and in the previous 10 years, there is an additional 11%. The rapid immigration is continuing. Between 1991 and 2000, 27,000 black persons immigrated to Canada and now live in Montreal. And in the five-year period of 2001 to 2006, alone, 22,655 black immigrants arrived in Montreal. When we look at the major origins of the black population in Canada, we see a fairly interesting trend. And this is Canada as a whole, and this is Montreal. And here you have 16% of the black population in Montreal were born in Africa. 40% were born in Canada, and another 40% were born in the Caribbean. In Canada as a whole, it's a slightly different configuration, with 44%, slightly more, being Canadian-born, significantly fewer being Caribbean-born, and more being African-born. And some of that probably has to do with language, as particularly the Haitian population and the French-speaking population naturally finds its way to Quebec. When we look at the Caribbean origins alone, here we see 96 and 2006, we see that the Haitian community accounts for the overwhelming majority of black immigrants from the Caribbean. And what we see as well is a slight decrease in the percentage of black people from more Anglophone islands in the Caribbean. Barbados, it's dropped a little bit. Trinidad and Tobago, it's dropped a little bit. Jamaica, it's dropped a little bit. But Haitian immigration continues to increase. Here, what we look at is the black immigrant population by where people were born and when they arrived. And what it tells us is that, where am I? Close to 27,000 persons were born in Africa, and they accounted for almost 1 in 6 of the population. This percentage has risen dramatically in the last 10 years, since the last census, from 12.7% in 1996. I think I need to be on the next slide. Now here we look at the impact of immigration policy on the gender balance in the community. What we know is that favoritism in immigration policy toward black women over black men is evident in every immigration period since 1961. If you look at the non-black population, you see that that there are significantly a better balance between men and women, and if anything, more likely at times that that men will predominate in the non-black community in the immigrant population. But in the black community, if you see, particularly in these periods, before 71, between 71 and 81, between 81 and 90, much higher percentages of black female immigrants than men. And that is a direct result of Canadian immigration policy at the time. Black women were more likely to have been born in the Caribbean, whereas black men were more likely to have been born in Africa. Black immigrants, then, are vital, youthful, and upwardly mobile, and constitute the overwhelming percentage of the black labor force in Montreal. Black immigration patterns have also had a profound effect on neighborhood life. In Côte-des-Neiges, 70% of all blacks are immigrants. In Saint-Michel and Montreal North, 2 out of 3 blacks are immigrants. So this presents a backdrop about immigration, age, gender. Now we're going to look at the socioeconomic data. Ready? Okay. Here what we're looking at are educational attainment rates. And this was the 96 rates for the black community, 96 rate for the non-black community, 2006 for the black community, and 2006 for the non-black community. So what do we see? We see that rates of university completion rose substantially. Approximately 1 in 10 members of the black community had completed a university degree in 1996. In 2006, 1 in 6, a change from 10.6 to 16.5%. However, blacks still lag considerably on the upper educational levels when compared to non-blacks. So if you look at non-blacks in 06, 5.7 have a graduate degree compared to 4.3 of the black community. 15.5% have completed university compared to 12.2% of the black community. If we look more particularly at the population age 25 to 44, we see an interesting picture. Advancing levels of educational attainment are very clearly visible here. Here you see 6.3 plus 17.6, almost 1 in 4 black people between the ages of 25 and 44 have at least a university degree. However, even when you look at that, the educational levels have risen for everybody. So for the non-black community, they are even higher. Here you have a 23.8 with a university degree and 8.1. So the trend is upwards, but interestingly enough, particularly upwards for this age cohort, both in the black community and the non-black community. The next slide, which begins to hone in on the issues of the day, are the income. How much money, what is the average income that people make in both communities? And here we begin to see some very severe discrepancies. Members of the black community earn one-third less than members of the non-black community. The average income for all Montrealers, for all black Montrealers, was $22,701 versus $34,000 for Montrealers in general. Why is this? Well, we get some more, we get a better clue when we begin to look at the total income for the population 15 plus. And here I ask you to bear with me because there's a lot of data on this one table. And what do we see? One in three members of the black community had total incomes of less than $10,000 in 2006. Among non-blacks, that's one in four. Almost 7 in 10 blacks had total incomes less than $25,000 a year. So if you add up the 34 and another 34, you get 68. But if you look at the non-black population, it comes to slightly more than 50%. These are very substantial differences. Now, if we look at people who earn more, twice the percentage of non-blacks have total incomes between $45,000 and $75,000. Here, it's for non-blacks 16%. For blacks, it's 7.5%. About 1 in 200 blacks had incomes greater than $100,000 in 2006. Among non-blacks, the percentage of people earning more than $100,000 was six times higher, at 3.4% versus 0.6%. The higher the income category, the more likely it will be overrepresented by non-black men and underrepresented by black women. One in nine non-black men earned more than $75,000 in 2006, far outpacing the figures for non-black women, where less than one in 27, 3.6%, earned more than $75,000. Black men were less likely than non-black women to have incomes greater than $75,000, as only 1 in 40, 2.7%, were in this income category. About 1 in 100 black women had incomes greater than $75,000 in 2006, a percentage 10 times lower than that of non-black men. So the question becomes, why is this? Why are these total incomes so discrepant? Why the differences? So we decided to take a look at, well, to what extent does one's education impact on how much one earns? And here we see profoundly that even within educational categories, the discrepancies between what members of the black community earn and what members of the non-black community earn are profound. Here, persons who have a university degree, on average, in the non-black community, they earn, or more than a university degree, they earn $65,000 a year. Members of the black community with the same degrees only earn $37,000. If you look just at a bachelor's degree level, non-blacks earn close to $50,000. Blacks earn close to $32,000. And so it goes on, so you begin to ask the question, what is going on here? Certainly, we've all learned and been brought to believe that education brings a higher income. Why would it be that people with the same educational qualifications would have such discrepancies in what they earn? To try and examine this further, let me go back once. Another thing to look at, which is interesting, is that blacks with higher educational qualifications. A member of the black community with a bachelor's degree will make less than $32,000. A member of the non-black community with less than a university degree will make more than them. And a member of the non-black community with a bachelor's degree will earn substantially more than a member of the black community with a graduate degree. So what is going on here? What accounts for this? Well, we then took a look at the level of educational attainment by total income. So here what you have are income categories, ranges of what people make. And I know that tables like this are difficult to follow. Let me summarize some of the main findings, and all of this is available for you in the studies that we've produced here. So we know that 3 in 10 members of the black community who have completed a graduate degree, an MA or a PhD, or an advanced degree in medicine, dentistry, veterinary medicine, or optometry, earned more than $45,000. That's 3 in 10, 30%. Of this group, 6.4% earned more than $100,000. But when you look at non-blacks with the same qualifications, more than half, 54.4%, earned at least $45,000, and 17% earned more than $100,000. 1 in 5 black persons who hold a bachelor's degree earned $45,000 or more. Less than 2 in 100 earned more than $100,000. Well, if that's the data about education, how does it relate to occupations in which members of the black community are employed? Blacks constituted 4.2% of the labor force in Montreal. So if we lived in a society where all things were equal, one would expect that 4.2% of the managers would be members of the black community. 4.2% of the judges, lawyers, physicians, dentists would be members of the black community. But that's not the case. What we find is that blacks are underrepresented in the higher status, better paying jobs. There are 1.8% in the management positions, 1.4% as judges, lawyers, and notaries, 1.8% of physicians, and overrepresented in the less status, less well paying positions, the clerical positions, the sales and service positions, and interestingly enough, are slightly overrepresented as educators and human service providers, which to me is a clear indicator that given the high percentage of young people in the black community and its commitment to working on their behalf, that increasingly members of the black community are finding careers in the education and human service categories. So then said, okay, well, what about if we take a look within each of these occupations? So we know that there are fewer black managers or fewer black lawyers and all that, and that would affect income. Right. But what about when we compare black lawyers to non-black lawyers or black managers to non-black managers? What do we find there? Certainly, if all things were equal, people would receive equal pay. But what we find instead is that non-black managers were 3 times, well, okay, here we got another problem. Here we got to switch to 2 slides. Okay. This is of the black community. So I'm going to ask you to focus on a few figures that we tried to highlight, but I couldn't figure out how. So look at a few figures about the black community, and that is non-black managers earning $75,000 or more represented 11.5% of the population. So here's managers, this is a non-black. I need the other one. Yeah, okay. So here in management occupations, 11%, almost 12% earn more than $75,000. Now can we switch to the other one? But if you take a look at non-blacks, you have 31, 32%, three times as high, who make $75,000 or more. If you take a look in judges, lawyers, and notaries in the non-black community here, you have 35, 48, close to half earning more than $75,000 a year. But if we switch back to the black community, we find that only 19% earn that much. So what are we finding out? We're finding that even within the same professions, black lawyers and non-black lawyers, black managers and non-black managers, the income discrepancies are profound. Now, some of this may be explained by the limitations of the research, and that is these are broad occupational categories. In managers, Statistics Canada lists hundreds of types of managers. We in our study can only look at broad categories. It may be, with further research, when you look more at specific management kinds of positions, that the discrepancies may go down. Or it may also be that the control over corporate decision-making, higher management positions, partners and law firms, that black representation at that level is very, very minimal. And that these institutions and these professions have historically been controlled by and run by non-blacks, the elite of the Francophone and the Anglophone community. So one could argue, okay, as the black community begins to enter that corporate world and those kind of careers, fine, they're starting off not at the level that the people have been in a long time, but then the issues become what needs to be done to make sure that they are fully represented, not just as frontline managers, but in corporate boardrooms and in the places where the decisions get made as well. So then, moving right along. So we then shifted to take a look at participation rates. Participation rates are people who are in the labor force, are either working, looking for work, and what do we find? We find that participation rates in the labor force are higher in the black community than in the non-black community at almost every age range. And that members of the black community stay in the labor force much longer than members of the non-black community. So people are out there looking for work. But how does that affect unemployment levels, which is the next slide? Well, here we look at unemployment rates in 1996, 2006. So one of the things that we find is conditions are much better in 2006 than they were in 96. But if we take a look here at black unemployment levels, they're twice as high as that of non-blacks, 13.4% versus 6%, 6.6%. And for women, 13.5 versus 6.4, 13.2 versus 6.9. So it's consistent for both genders. So we said, okay, well, unemployment often is influenced by how old one is. Younger people tend to be more likely to be unemployed, and let's see how that maybe that plays out. Maybe that's one of the factors that can explain these discrepancies. But what we find out is that black unemployment rates are higher at every age cohort. So it's consistent throughout the system. Well, we then asked the question, well, we believe that the higher one's education level, the lower should be the unemployment rates. What happens if we look at unemployment rates by levels of education? And here we get into some very disturbing statistics, and that is, as the provost said before, the unemployment rate for black university graduates is 10.9%. For non-black high school dropouts, it's virtually the same, it's 12%. You have a graduate level. Members of the black community with a graduate degree, their unemployment rate is 13.4%, higher than those of substantially higher, almost three times higher than the non-black community, and higher than that of non-black high school dropouts. Non-black high school dropouts, their unemployment rate was 12%, and for blacks with a graduate degree, their unemployment rate was 13.4%. Some of it, and there'll be some discussion, and maybe Anne-Marie will point it out as well, some of it concerns the recognition of foreign credentials by immigrants and their educational levels, which affects employment and unemployment. But what we do here today is to provide the broad portrait and to encourage a discussion about why and what can be done. The last slide that we look at in terms of income and socioeconomic data is home ownership. We know that home ownership is a key asset. It is likely the most important asset that people will accumulate in their lifetime. It is a pathway to stability, to economic security. It is an investment. It ties one to one's community. Yet we find that in the black community in Montreal, that 37.8% of members of the black community own the home that they live in, compared to 63% of the non-black community. It's almost the mirror. 62% of blacks rent, and 62% of non-blacks own. And what are the reasons for that, and how do we approach that? To summarize these part of the findings, the findings portray a bleak portrait of economic life for blacks in Montreal. Less likely to be employed, blacks earn substantially less. They are underrepresented in positions which command greater authority and greater salaries than Montrealers generally. Even for those blacks who have completed university, life does not hold the same promise as it does for their non-black counterparts. It appears not only that positions of authority are blocked for blacks, but that a black person with a university degree and a Montrealer who has dropped out of high school have the same chance of finding a job. And while this bleak economic portrait describes the situation for all blacks in Montreal, the prospects for black women are even less promising, and their economic conditions are even far more severe. That takes us then to take a look at poverty levels in each community, both in Canada as a whole and nationally, and in Montreal. And what we see is that the poverty rates for the black community are twice that of the non-black community, 39% versus 20%. In Canada as a whole, well, the poverty rates are a bit lower, but the gap between blacks and non-blacks remains the same. So it is not just an issue in Quebec or Montreal. It is a consistent issue across Canada. What we see is that women have much higher poverty rates than men. And here you see it. And now, just to be sure, so you don't get confused with the numbers, the previous slides are on the whole population, zero to whatever. Certain tables are only on the population age 15 plus who are in the workforce. So that's why the numbers are different here and there, because you're dealing, the percentages are different because you're dealing with slightly different population bases. But here we see it. 38.5% of black women live below the poverty line. 36.4% of all black persons in Montreal live below the poverty line, twice that of the non-black community. Well, we then took a look at age differences. And how does that affect poverty data? And what we find is some things which must give us pause. Almost one of every two black children under the age of 15 in Montreal lived below the poverty line in 2006. This is more than twice the percentage of non-black children living in poverty. It's 47% versus 21%. Black children accounted for 8% of all children in Montreal. Right? Only 4.5% of the population, but there are many more children, young people in the black community. So the 4.5 produce 8% of all children in Montreal. but they represented closer to 17% of all low-income children. Close to one in three persons who were poor and black in 2006 were children under the age of 15. And also, as we know, both for blacks and non-blacks, among the elderly, the rates of poverty are much higher. So that gives the whole kind of portrait or spectrum, in a nutshell, of the socioeconomic data. And we know socioeconomic data impacts on family life, as does family life impact on the socioeconomic data. So we have some tables now looking at the dimensions of living arrangements of in the black community compared to the non-black community. So here's what we see. The percentage of black persons living in husband-wife families was substantially lower than non-blacks, and single-parent rates were twice as high in the black community. More than, where are we? What's the next one? What's the one after that? Okay, go back two. Yeah. Okay, so here we have it. The more than 4 in 10 are single-parent families, and compared to 18% of the non-black population. The next slide then looks at low-income status. People are part of a low-income family are here. People are part of a non-low-income family are here. And you can see husband-wife families are more likely to be not members of a low-income household, but single parents, half of the single parents live below the poverty line. More than half of the children in single-parent families live below poverty lines as well. Black husband-wife families are substantially more likely than other black persons to be homeowners. And in the black community, as I said, more than half of single parents live below the poverty line. We look then at the next slide, and there has been a particular kind of statement that I've heard, or an impression left in most people's mind, that the problem of single-parent families in the black community are particularly a problem of young people and of teenagers. But the data shows quite the contrary. It's not so. While we know that almost one in four black women aged 15 and over were single parents, right? But when we take a look at the whole single-parent population in the black community, young people under the age of 25 only constituted 5% of all the single parents in the black community. 26%, 27 were between the ages of 25 and 44, a third between the ages of 45 and 64. 17% were over the age of 65, and 22% of single-parent families in the black community were headed by people over the age of 80. So what we know is the rates of single parenthood among black women is three times the rate for non-black women. And women between the ages of 15 and 24, though important, do not constitute a substantial portion of the community. The highest rates are women between the ages of 45 and 64, and these are most likely women who immigrated, we see it in the data, from the Caribbean, unable to bring their husbands with them. The next slide that we have, this gives you just the structure of a very diverse black community. And we included all kinds of things. Husbands with black wives, husbands with non-black wives, husbands with black husbands. You know, we can ask same sex in the census. Husbands with other husbands, the whole contour. And what we find is the vast majority of people in the black community marry each other. However, black men were more likely to marry non-black women than were black women to marry non-black men. Less than half of all black children of any age live in husband-wife families where both parents are black. 5,710 black children live in interracial families. Another 4,490 black children live in husband-wife families or single-parent families where the parents are not black and are growing up without any black role model. Taken together, these more complex family relationships account for about 1 in 7 black children in Montreal. So what does that say, all this data to us? Let me summarize by excerpting from the emerging agenda that I believe the data speaks to. One is about promoting equality. Although there have been some improvements for members of the black community since 96, blacks continue to lag significantly behind non-blacks on every indicator of success. Average incomes and levels of university completion were a third lower in the black community. Poverty rates and unemployment rates were twice as high. Black persons were significantly underrepresented in higher status and higher paying occupations, and home ownership rates were substantially lower. Black women ranked lowest of all on all educational, occupational, and income criteria. There are demographic factors which explain a portion of these findings, such as a substantially higher percentage of children, women, single parents, immigrants, and unilingual Anglophones among blacks. The findings of inequality, however, are too pervasive to be accounted for by demographic factors alone. Inequality persists among persons with similar educational qualifications, among persons who perform similar types of jobs, among persons of the same gender and within the same age range, among persons with similar linguistic abilities, and among persons who live in the same neighborhood. In relation to each of these factors, blacks substantially underperform. Inequality is persistent, pervasive, widespread, and alarming. Demonstrable results need to be multifaceted and evident in both the public and private markets. Promoting opportunities in higher paying and higher status occupations where black persons are currently significantly underrepresented is one such approach. Gaining entry to corporate and professional doors accelerates integration, but not necessarily equality. Black university graduates earn a third less than non-black university graduates, have unemployment rates comparable to non-black high school dropouts, and when working in the higher status, management and legal occupations earn considerably less. Policies to facilitate access up the corporate ladder and into the echelon that makes corporate decisions are very warranted from the data. French language instruction for the 1 in 8 unilingual black Anglophones may decrease their marginality and increase their employability and competitiveness in the global economy. Parallel efforts to promote greater bilingualism among blacks can translate into higher rates of better employment and better pay. Black women have the least income. They are far more likely to be poor than men or non-black women, are less educated, and are more likely to head single-parent families. Irrespective of age, education, language abilities, or occupation, black women have lower total incomes than all other groups. We suggest that consideration be given to a broad array of programs, from those which encourage black women to start businesses, undertake professional careers, and have a place in corporate decision-making, to neighborhood solutions for single parents living below the poverty line with accessible programs leading to real jobs. There needs to be an emphasis on youth. It's clearly suggested by our findings. Black persons under the age of 25 account for 43% of the population. The challenges for young blacks are daunting. Of black persons aged 15 to 24, 38% had not completed high school. Of those in the labor force, 19% were unemployed. And of those employed, 96% earned less than $25,000. Home ownership represents the major assets that Canadians will likely acquire during their lifetime, and members of the black community have dramatically lower rates of home ownership. Persons with lower income who lack capital and who may have arrived in Montreal after housing prices took off are less likely to be able to purchase a home. Establishing credit references may be difficult. It may be difficult to obtain loans for homes in less desirable neighborhoods. Lending institutions may render themselves less accessible to blacks. And there may be some hidden biases against selling to blacks in certain neighborhoods. Whatever each of these factors may contribute to the overall problem, the results are black home ownership is sharply lower than that of non-blacks. Property owners tend to have more of a say in local matters than persons who rent. There's more of a direct relationship between the taxes one pays and the services one receives. And there's more of a commitment to protect and preserve one's capital investment. Consideration might be given to developing and accessing programs which can assist members of the black community to purchase their first homes and establish equity. The second theme is strengthening families. Black families in Montreal are experiencing considerable financial and emotional stress. Unique demographic data exert a powerful influence on black families in Montreal. Past immigration policies impacted on the gender structure of the black community, resulted in a substantially higher percentage of adult women. Rapid immigration continues to enlarge, enrich, and diversify the black community. Economic stresses related to immigration are often combined with cultural stress and loss of identity brought by the immigrant experience, placing further pressure on families. Immigration experiences have separated parents from children in an unfamiliar environment, which lacks traditional communal support. The absence of significant numbers of elders erodes family cohesion, weakens links to tradition, and may lead to a sense of isolation among the black elderly themselves. More than 4 in 10 black children under the age of 15 live in single-parent families, and almost 1 in 4 black women aged 15 and over was a single parent in 2006. The data indicate that contrary to popular conceptions, women between the age of 15 and 24, although important, do not constitute a substantial portion of the black single-parent population. Rather, single-parent rates are twice as high in the black community at every age interval. The data suggests a reassessment of strategies which focus on young women alone. Programs targeting young single mothers are of enormous importance, but are not appropriate for older single mothers. Lastly, diversity and cohesion. Given the significant increasing diversity among blacks in Montreal and the complexity of black identities, one would not expect or seek a unanimity of direction, expectation, or strategic orientation on all issues. The data indicate, however, that there are critical issues challenging all segments of the black community, irrespective of background, which include expanding opportunities and strengthening families. Being able to speak with one voice about these issues is particularly challenged by language and residential patterns. Large numbers of unilingual black Anglophones and unilingual black Francophones cannot communicate using a common language. Residential patterns reflect linguistic proficiencies, establishing geographic distance among members of the black community. The data indicate, therefore, a strong need to increase fluency in French as well as rates of bilingualism, not only to advance economic prosperity, but to develop and strengthen a distinct, inclusive, cohesive and dynamic black Montreal civic identity and sense of shared first-class citizenship. Thank you.